a new era after years of war and brutality in Syria.
It looked like a miracle that happened after around 54 years of Assad's regime.
The country's future, still uncertain, but for now, citizens are feeling unimaginable joy.
This is amazing, Scott. Like, as for someone who was born and raised in Syria and coming from a Kurdish minority background, this is almost surreal.
Today is Monday, December 9th, and this is The Issue from VOA.
I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Lori London.
They killed many of our relatives for no reason at all. They did unjustified and unbelievable things.
Damascus stirred back to life on Monday as the start of a hopeful but uncertain era after rebels seized the capital and President Bashar al-Assad fled to Russia over the weekend, following 13 years of civil war and more than 50 years of his family's brutal rule. Anti-regime activist Walid Safour, who has been in exile in England, says he can't wait to finally go home.
The first thing is to go and to visit the grave and the tomb of my mother. I was prevented from speaking to her before she died, to listen to her last words.
Tens of thousands of people held in Syria's notorious prisons have been freed. There are reports of tearful reunions with family members who were believed to have been killed years ago. Many, like U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, were surprised at how quickly the regime collapsed.
I think the entire international community was surprised to see that the opposition forces moved as quickly as they did. And everybody expected to see a much more stiff resistance from Assad's forces.
The U.S. and other global leaders are keeping a close eye on what comes next.
As this unfolds, there's a potential that elements in the area, such as ISIS, could try to take advantage of this opportunity and regain capability.
Well, Lori, this is just one surprise after the next. The uprising itself was sort of a surprise, 13 years of civil war, but they really, in the very beginning of this, started making headway almost immediately. And then the speed at which they, first took Aleppo and then took Damascus was really surprising.
The U.S. Defense Secretary saying there are still concerns that this could, sort of create a vacuum of sorts, a power vacuum. So obviously world leaders are concerned and looking at it closely. But obviously in the meantime, there's a lot of hope and joy and celebration there. We're joined by VOA Kurdish journalist Sirwan Kajo, who was born and raised in Syria.
Thanks so much for being able to take the time and talk to us about this.
Thank you, Scott.
Let's start big picture. What's happening now?
Sure. So after the rebels and their allies completely took over Damascus and Assad fled, now they're talking about him being granted asylum in Russia. They're getting down to business, really. The government of the former regime remained intact, and that was intentional on the opposition side. They decided to keep that in order for things to, continue working. So there is a functional government in Syria. Even the central bank said today that all transactions are fine. The Syrian pound is still being used, and all government institutions are still working business as usual. Of course, there are some disruptions here and there, given the magnitude of the situation. But there will be a transitional government very soon. As a matter of fact, the government, the prime minister, and those representative of the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham and other rebel groups met this morning in Damascus to basically go over who will do what and so that there is a smooth transfer of power between the two sides. But it will. It looks like the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, and this is a U.S.-designated terrorist organization, will have the upper hand in the formation of the government just by the size of their power and the role that they play. They played throughout this offensive that lasted about 11 days before Damascus was captured and Assad fled.
So you said, you know, and I'm assuming you're talking about one of the groups, Abu Muhammad al-Jalani, right?
Correct.
Militant leader, main group that was driving the country's armed opposition. And as you said, this group was designated as a terrorist organization. From what we've been hearing and reporting is that he's been saying this is going to be an inclusive, you know, all religions, you know, much different than they have been presented or that the country has certainly seen in a very long time. Do you think that that's actually something that can happen, or are these just words sort of like what we heard from the Taliban?
Yeah, well, so far they've been very open about, you know, including all components of Syrian society. And Syria is a very diverse country. You've got Arabs who make up the majority, the Sunni Arabs, and you've got the Kurds, you've got Christians who make about 12% right now. You've got the Alawites, the sect of the former president up in the west and the coastal region. It's a very diverse country. And Jolani and his group has been trying basically to give assurances to all the minorities, including Christians, Kurds, and Alawites, that their rights will be protected. Now, we don't know how that looks like. So far, in Aleppo, which is a very diverse city, they've sat down with the representative from the different communities. And I talked to people on the ground. I even talked to some Christian leaders who said that, you know, their neighborhoods are actually protected by members of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, and so are the Kurds. The Kurds still have two armed groups in two neighborhoods, actually. We don't know what will happen in Aleppo, but the same thing in Damascus. And Damascus has a small Shia minority population, and of course, a significant Alawite and Christian population as well. It remains to be seen if these words are translated into tangible actions, because given the history of the group and especially when it comes to governance in Idlib province up in the northwest, they've been there for some time. Their track record is not promising, but it looks like they're trying to change, at least in the messaging. In their messaging, they're trying to be as inclusive as possible. They're trying to appease to both the Syrians and the international community to at least get the acceptance and the recognition that they need to in order to function as a legitimate government moving forward.
How extraordinary is all of this?
This is amazing, Scott. Like, as for someone who was born and raised in Syria and coming from a Kurdish minority background, this is almost surreal. I talked to family members. I have family members here who also lived under the Assad regime. It's almost unbelievable because for 54 years, this regime dominated society. It wasn't like just the brutality of the government, but the fact that they dominated all aspects of life in Syria. So, and after almost 14 years of a brutal civil war, for the most part, Assad was responsible for the death of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. And we see all these people who are being released in prisons across the country. It's just almost surreal, you know. It's going to have, for people, it's going to take a while to get used to the new thing. You know, like, for example, suddenly the state-run media talks about a free Syria without Assad. Things that Syrians were never used to, because for a few decades, all they knew was a government that was in charge of all aspects of life.
Right. Very hard line, very strong dictator, brutal, So you've talked to your family, you've talked to the people, you know, that you've you know, grown up with there. What are they saying about the mood and what they're feeling and what they're seeing in real time here?
Sure. So people are still celebrating this, actually, even in the Kurdish region, which has been outside of the Syrian control, Syrian government control for some time now because of the support that the local Kurdish forces were getting from the U.S. and their fight against ISIS. The region has been enjoying a level of autonomy, not a formal autonomy, but the government still had presence there. So I talked to my family members, who suddenly, like, all these statues of the former president and then and his father, of course, the senior Assad, suddenly were gone. Airport, the international airport in my hometown, for example, suddenly taken over by local forces. All state institutions are no longer under the Syrian Ba'ath regime. So for now, it feels good. But a lot of people are also, like, cautiously optimistic about the future. They don't know what awaits them, not only because of the nature of the ideology of this group that is in charge of Damascus right now, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, HTS, that is, but also because of the other factions that are backed by Turkey and also in alliance with Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, groups that are actually opposed to a lot of communities in northern Syria. And so you've got, it's a mixed bag. People are happy that Assad is no longer in the picture, but they're also anxious about what's going to happen next.
We talked a little bit about this, or you talked a little bit about this previously, but HTS has been trying to rebrand themselves. You know, they're trying to say, we're not that anymore. They're backing away from Al-Qaeda. Do you think that there's reality there?
So they have changed for sure, even in terms of rebranding. They changed their names a couple of times. So it used to be, like, when they established this group, it was called Jabhat al-Nusra wal-Nusra Front. And then when they severed ties with Al-Qaeda back in 2016, and then they rebranded into Hayat Tahrir al-Sham to basically tell the world and Syrians that we are a solely Syrian group. It's still, had continued to basically carry out its, you know, jihadist ideology. It still believes in Sharia law, for example. And but that all was, like, until recently, suddenly the leader of the group says that we're for an inclusive Syria, Syria that embraces all its, religions and ethnicities and sects. That tone is completely different. But like I said, from the people that I talk to on the ground, everybody's like, okay, that's nice, that's good. What does this mean? Does this mean that the Alawites, for example, will have a say in the formation of the new government? Will the Kurds be protected? And same thing with other groups, you know? So even for a lot of Sunni Arabs, actually, that's like most of the Syrians don't subscribe to the extremist ideology of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. So for now, it seems to be all right. It's the messaging that they have adopted seems to be working, but who knows what will happen tomorrow. And judging by other examples around the region, maybe people have the right to be a bit skeptical about what's happening right now.
I just have one last question, and I'm not sure you can even answer it, but Austin Tice, an American journalist, has been held captive in Syria for, I know, over 12 years. There have been reports that the White House believes he's still alive. Have you any information or heard anything about them looking for his whereabouts or knowledge of his what his situation may be and if they're able to potentially locate him and bring him back to the U.S.?
Yeah. Well, Austin, first of all, I should say that I know Austin on a personal level. We met a few times before he decided to go to Syria. As a matter of fact, I've reported on his situation continuously since his disappearance back in 2012. So this is also personal for me. I know him very well. I also know his parents. I met with them I've met with them a few times, and I've reported on his story very closely. So I've been following very closely. It looks like the U.S. government has something. maybe not as President Biden said in his last speech about Syria, that there is some evidence, but we're not sure if it's direct evidence. And the family sounds optimistic about his fate. A lot of people that I know in Damascus, if he's still held, that they met him while they were in prison a while back, of course. Nothing current, nothing new. But now, with more and more people are being released from these different prisons in Damascus and elsewhere, we might have more information about his situation. I really hope that he's still alive because he was an excellent reporter who really cared about Syria, who understand the nuance of different dynamics in the country, and it would be great for him to be reunited with his family.
I've read stories about people who've come out of the jails and had this reunion with their family who thought they were dead years ago.
Yeah.
They just lost touch with them because, of the regime.
Sure. I actually have some distant relatives who have disappeared since. I have at least one who disappeared in Homs back in 2013. He was a university student studying petrochemicals petrochemical engineering in Homs, and he disappeared at the peak of the uprising. His family is looking everywhere right now because there's still that glimmer of hope that he's alive and could be somewhere out. Now, there's still a lot of people who are in different prisons, haven't been released. It's just a very emotional situation. I actually talked to families of others who got out of prisons not knowing that Assad is no longer there. A lot of people were actually arrested under his father's rule, so before 2000, mm-hmm. Yes. And they didn't know that Bashar existed as a president, let alone him being, toppled. So this is a very humanitarian story that will continue to unfold as we hear all these horrific stories of torture, inhumane treatment of prisoners. For the most part, with people who did nothing, basically either participated in a small gathering or an uprising at the peak of the civil war or the uprising, or people who had connection with other people, so their guilt was biased. They were arrested for guilt of association, and Syria is well known for that. There are a lot of Palestinians and Lebanese people, actually, who were also arrested back in the day. And now we hear all different stories that you would only see in movies and read about in books.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
VOA Kurdish journalist Sirwan Kajo.
Well, that was amazing. The personalization, the story that he told about his own cousin and the other people in the country after 54 years of brutal, brutal regime rule.
Unimaginable what that must feel like. And, you can't help but sort of get chills and feel no matter what the uncertainty poses as to what comes next. For now, you can feel this level of relief.
No, this is
masses.
Yeah, an extraordinarily great day for the people of Syria who have been brutalized by this regime for so long.
You've been listening to The Issue from The Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone who works here at VOA, thank you so much for being with us today.
You can follow The Issue on X and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And for news 24/7, just check out our website, voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Lori London. We'll talk to you tomorrow.